You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am so excited that today I am going to finally give the news that I've been teasing, and maybe you've already heard because I was on the news this morning and we have officially launched. Maybe you haven't heard, so here it is. It's delicately wrapped up in this nice interview with my friend Peter Islin. Peter was the founder of Metroland, which was a arts and entertainment paper magazine in the Capital Region for about 20 years or more. I'll let the interview do the talking because I can't remember right now. I'm just too excited because my news is that the Metroland now belongs, well, it belongs to all of us, but I'm starting it back up. And things are going to be crazy and awesome, and I'm so excited to finally get this going. We just have the website for now, but we're looking into print, hopefully as soon as October. We are a nonprofit organization because we are helping with other nonprofit organizations and helping with venues in the area, which are nonprofit organizations. And so I'm going to be raising money and trying to keep this thing going for as long as we can. I'm really excited. We have a great staff. There's so much information that I'm going to share moving forward. But right now, I'm just excited to present this interview to you with the founder of Metroland and doing unofficial passing of the torch with Peter Islin. Enjoy that interview and stay tuned to the Mistress of None. We will be right back with Peter Islin.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes, and my guest today is Peter Islin. Peter, how are you?
I'm great, Erin. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being had. Peter, is this your first podcast interview?
Yes, this is my very first podcast interview. I love podcasts. I listen, I watch. Yours is great, and this is a real thrill. I'm a virgin, podcast virgin.
Well, we'll be gentle.
It's about the only way I'm a virgin.
Well, thank you very much. That surprises me that you have not been. I'm sure you've gone through other interviews in your lifetime.
In my life, I've had other interviews, but the old media, you know, not this cool stuff. You know.
This cool stuff. Well, I think the old media is pretty cool, and speaking of old media, how did you get your start?
Speaking of old.
No, you said it.
My start in media came semi-accidentally. I studied music, and that's still my training. But in 1978, I decided that this area needed some sort of arts and entertainment magazine. At the time, everything was disco. This was the disco era.
Wow.
So the original Metroland was a monthly. This is introducing Metroland. The original Metroland was a monthly, and it was very, to call it journalism would be a major stretch. We went around and took pictures of people in bars and restaurants and people dancing and freak out and all this stuff. And, of course, you had to advertise if you wanted us to come take pictures of your club. So there was no, there was no integrity. It was total fluff, but people went crazy over it.
So you are the founder of Metroland.
I am the founder of Metroland. First issue was June 1978. That is correct.
Okay.
I was just turning 24.
Wow.
So, and I'd come off the road. I had been in a band, and I decided that I wanted to I decided I wanted to try and be some sort of a big shot here. You know, Troy is my hometown. But I thought, well, if I put together a magazine like this, well, the girls are all going to want to be in it. And, you know, so.
So you did it for chicks.
I did it for chicks.
All right.
I mean, it's why a lot of us go into music, too. But, yeah, I the 24-year-old me, that's why I did it. So I wasn't really concerned. I had no training in journalism. I had no training in marketing. I learned everything as I went along. And unfortunately, fortunately, the whole disco era thing kind of petered out. And, you know, it was ironic because I was a live musician, and here I was promoting something that was killing live musicians. So by 1980, I got to really think now, we took it to like a weekly newspaper format, and then we expanded into like covering arts and theater and live concerts, and it became a real arts guide. But it was still a little hinky with the buy an ad, we'll do a write up, you know, that whole game. And the big change came in 1987. I went to a conference in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, beautiful, beautiful place, in the middle of July of 1987. And this was a meeting of the Association of Alternative News Weeklies, including, you know, people like the Village Voice and the LA Weekly, all these big markets and small. And I wanted Metroland to be accepted into the organization, but they looked at it and they said, haha, you know, are you kidding? There's no journalism. What are you talking about? You're a little fluffy arts guide. So I was like, I was chastened, and I came back from that conference, and I had gotten religion. I was determined now to make this into a real newspaper with real journalism, and if the advertisers didn't like it, well, too bad, because we're going for it. And readers certainly liked it. We kicked it off in September of that year. I had a gentleman doing a column for me prior to that, whose name was Stephen Leon, and I knew that he actually has a master's degree in journalism, and he was a real thing. So I appointed him as managing editor, and we immediately launched into all kinds of political coverage, very left-wing, as most alternative papers were. But that's how it really became a what I would call legitimate journalistic enterprise. And then that was 87. And then in 95, it had been 17 years, and I was really tired of the weekly deadlines and the grind and the just running a business, period. So I sold it. Stephen Leon and a group of investors took over, and he then ran it for another 20 years. And it was really even better as a newspaper after I left. He did a wonderful job, and, you know, we had some great cover subjects along the way and great stories and good writers.
That are only listening and not watching, he did point at me. Oh. So, we're going to get back to that in a little bit.
Anyway.
No, I did get on the cover twice. It was awesome.
So. Yes, you were a cover subject and well-deserved.
Thank you very much.
And but I had nothing to do with it because I moved to L.A. at that time and got into the business I really wanted to be in, which was entertainment, and not as a performer or a player, but on the business side. And I worked for a management company. And I ended up working for an attorney who had become, who actually was a music producer as well. He produced this band Quiet Riot in the 80s that some older people might remember. And I learned from him. He's a tough boss, but I learned. And I learned about music and film and television and composers and he gave me I became almost like a paralegal. And it was a wonderful experience, even though it was difficult, to work for this gentleman. And then from there, I went off on my own. I managed some clients. And eventually I moved back to this area in 2008 to look after my aging parents. And I am fortunate enough to have a job based in LA that I can do from here. I was a remote worker before it was fashionable. And I'm still doing it. But at the same time, I rediscovered my musical side. And almost within the first couple of years that I got back to this region, I found myself playing in bands, playing keyboards, and I'm still doing that as well. In fact, my you know, at this advanced age, my music, I've never been busier playing music with a bunch of different bands here, Rhode Island, you know. So I can't complain. It's been a very interesting life. It's been wonderful.
You've kind of come full circle then.
Yeah, yeah, I did geographically and professionally.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned about the music in TV and film and stuff. That was actually how you and I were introduced.
Right.
Because I was talking to somebody about that, and they said, you need to meet Peter Ristlin.
Yeah.
And so you and I had lunch and discussed it. And
yeah, I remember. I couldn't tell you what year that was, but it was quite a while ago.
It was quite a while ago, yeah.
You know, we talked about like ASCAP and BMI. And
yeah,
that
all of that good stuff.
All that boring stuff.
Oh, very boring stuff. So that's probably why I didn't really pursue it. I was like, I'm bored. I'm just kidding. But I was grateful for the connection.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain basic fundamental music business stuff that performers and especially songwriters should be aware of and should know. You know, I'm always happy to share my knowledge with any performer or
yeah,
writer.
You were very generous with your information.
Yeah, because,
for sure, and
you know,
I appreciate
I'm
that.
From the same place. You know, I love musicians. I believe in it. So
yeah, we should find a way to like have you like teach some sort of seminar or something like that.
Now you got to pay me then.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. We'll make you some. We'll get you off the road a little
all right,
bit. Maybe maybe let's cut out the Rhode
Island.
You're
so good
gigs.
You're so good at this stuff. You can represent me.
I see. This is symbiosis. It's happening
mm-hmm.
right here. All right, we're going to represent one another.
You're all seeing it or hearing it as it happens. This is totally impromptu.
So you said that you still work basically out of LA, even though you're here. And what is that job?
That company is a very interesting niche. It's called Q Factory. It was actually founded by an old and dear friend of mine, a fellow musician from Troy as well, who's been in LA for 40 years. What am I saying? 45, 50, close to 50 years. I don't know. He's been there a long time. So
is that Bob?
That's Bob Etall, who was known in the industry as Robert Etall. But in Troy, he's still Bob Etall and Bobby Etall. He created a company about 25 years ago in which he developed a music library of what's called production music, which means it's instrumental. You know, it's not songs. It's music that, you will hear it in just about every movie trailer that's out there. The misconception is that trailers use music from the movie. Almost never the case. For one thing, trailers are created when the movie is not necessarily even finished, much less scored. So trailers are advertising. It's marketing. And they need music and sound design, which most people would think of as sound effects, that will compel people to go see the film. So this very specific type of music and sound. Robert Bobby created a library of this type of music and sound design and made it available to be licensed. And he was really a pioneer in this industry of trailer of music, you know, licensing of music for trailers. And he saw that this he kind of saw the future and he capitalized on it. And he did extremely well. He ended up selling the company about 6 years ago.
Oh wow! I didn't know that.
I went with it.
He sold you too?
He sold me. I was very helpful to him in actually putting the deal together. But he's still involved creatively. And I still have the gig.
I'm
still working for the people that own it now. And I essentially run, except for the creative side, even though I'm a musician, that's not my thing. So I handle the day-to-day business, which is essentially licensing. So it's like if you have an apartment, you can rent it to one person, and when that person leaves, you rent it to somebody else.
Yeah.
So you can keep licensing the same stuff over and over again to the same client, even with a different movie. So it's quite a nice formula.
Yeah, I mean, I know that a lot of musicians, especially full-time musicians, are always looking for ways to, you know, make money and, you know, different. You have to be very creative in how you can generate income. And so I know there have been even some local ones that have had some success with getting their music license. And my friends in Searcy, for example, I was watching Shameless on HBO, and all of a sudden
they had a placement.
I hear Cannonball, and I was like, ah, like I know that song. Or I'll hear like, you know, Sean Rao on
he's had stuff
on All of Us or whatever that show is. Or
I mean, typically they probably had it got it with companies that specialize in placing these songs into programs.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a company called Taxi that...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're still... Man, that guy takes me back to...
Right? I feel like I dated myself when I said it. So.
That takes me back to the late 90s, maybe? I mean, they've been around a long time. They were pioneering all this when the record industry was, you know, had a complete, you know, overhaul.
Yeah.
Well, look, Searcy deserves it. They're great. 100%. Love them.
Yes.
But nicest people in the world.
Absolutely.
And and Sean Rao, you know, he's made a big, you know, he's pretty well known nationally, if not internationally. So it's nice when you see people from this area. I mean, Albany has a lot of really great musicians and talented songwriters like yourself.
Oh. Well, thank you so much. There's no gun in the room. He just said that all on his own.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying it for the microphone.
I appreciate it. I never really went after the licensing kind of thing because at the time I didn't feel like I had any good recordings that I was confident in.
Yeah.
And I'm actually finally growing up a little bit and getting around to that with some of the new material that I've written.
Well.
And so I'm definitely going to explore that again once I get that.
And I'll tell you, these movie trailers now, they're always licensing songs.
Yep.
So they use our stuff kind of to amplify, like around the songs, if you will. But the songs are now the thing. And yes, sometimes they spend 6, even 7 figures to license a really big song by a major artist. However, they also will license from independent artists for much less. Mm-hmm. They save money, but they have something that works. So that's something we can talk about offline.
Yeah, we have to go now. No, I'm just kidding. No, I remember like there was this one movie in particular, and I think it was like based on a play. The movie ended up being horrible, but they used this Damien Rice song in the trailers.
Oh God. Yes. What, why do I licensed something. Wow.
See, so
I wish I could remember.
It was Julia Roberts.
I went after the rights to that for somebody. You see, in addition to my full-time job where I'm kind of on the selling side of it, I'm the one licensing the stuff. I also will take on gigs where people want me to negotiate to get a song for them.
Okay.
Typically advertising campaigns and things like that. And although I've done, I think maybe this was a document. It might have been this Jacques Cousteau's. I worked on a documentary film done by Jacques Cousteau's daughter.
Wow.
And it was something really, it was like an environmental ocean thing. And maybe I think she knew Damien Rice personally, and I had to like get the business end finished. I had to contact the publisher and all that kind of stuff. So that's funny that you should mention Damien Rice.
Yeah, but I mean, that it just shows you the power of music.
I think I actually
because,
talked to Damien Rice.
Oh, God.
He's like Irish or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I saw this movie, and I can't even remember the name of the movie. The movie sucked, but the song was called The Blower's Daughter, and I listened to it all the time.
Yeah.
But it like drew me in, and it made me, because of the commercial, it just started with this song, and the song just gets you like, oh, like you're like, I have to see this movie.
Well, that's, you see?
Yeah, that's the power of
works.
Music.
That's how it works. Exactly.
So that's, I mean, that's a very interesting, you've had some pretty interesting brushes with fame and.
Oh, are we going there?
Well, I think we might have to, should we?
No, it's not. This is supposed to be about me.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
You and your
friends.
I'm kidding.
All right.
Well, you do have a very famous friend.
Yeah, I am fortunate enough to count among some of my closest friends, Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy goes back to the Metroland days. I'll see if I can do this as concisely as possible. I've certainly told the story a million times, and by the way, he's told the story on podcasts. Mentioning my name.
Oh, so, that's cool.
Here, now I'm giving it back.
There we go. And this probably has just as many viewers as whatever podcast he was on.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. I can't even remember the guy's name. It's a guy that does a podcast about entrepreneurs and stuff like that. Forget his name. But anyway. So, Metroland in 1994, a year before my departure, as if we didn't have enough problems, these kids working for me wanted to do a sketch comedy show. And we, a guy by the name of Donald Metzner, who owned a big car dealership, sponsored the affair and bought time on the Fox station 23. And we put together a half hour show. Well, it's pretty bad. It was pretty bad. I mean, you got to understand, everybody was amateur. Nobody knew how, that's an easy thing to do, put together a comedy. But anyway, we cast people from the community, and one of them was like this, God, was this not even like 19-year-old kid who was going to St. Rose, the late St. Rose, and his name was Jimmy Fallon. And, you know, he's a good-looking kid, and he wrote a couple of sketches. They were funny. He obviously had some talent. And unbeknownst to me, he was also doing a lot of stand-up, bananas, and at the college he would do a lot of stand-up. But I never went to – I really wasn't that close to him at that time, even though – he ended up asking me for a job at Metroland, which I gave him, and he worked as a receptionist and brought me my mail. And but he was a great kid, a great personality, just great. So the following year, he's still working there, and I had sold the business, and I was saying goodbye to everybody and getting ready to move to California. And he comes up to me with a kind of shyly with a VHS tape and says, "Hey, this is a tape of my stand-up act. Maybe I know you're going out there. You're going to be with a management company. Maybe you could play it for people. Whatever, it'd be great." I said, "Oh, sure. Give me that. I'll take it." So I took it and forgot about it. And in November, I'm at my desk at my new job. And I'm kind of organizing things, and there's the VHS tape from Jimmy Fallon. And I'm like, I promised the kid I would do this. I've got to play it for these people. I've been here long enough that they'll trust me. They'll give me 10 minutes, So on a Friday afternoon, we're in November 95, I called other people in this management company into the conference room. And I said, "Just please give me a couple of minutes. I know you all want to go home. It's Friday afternoon. Just watch this. I promise this kid back home." They're like, "Oh, all right." They're all grumbling, and they sit down. So we put the tape in. It starts off, and there's Jimmy on stage. And I'm telling you, within 90 seconds, these people were jumping up and down, screaming at me, "What the F? Who is this kid? We need to sign him immediately. We get him out here." And they're like, they had like this incredible reaction. And so did I, because I had never seen him do the stand up.
So you had never even watched the tape yourself.
I never watched
That's
it.
That's hilarious.
No. And I'm like, oh my God, this kid is gifted. He's doing these musical impressions. He's doing, you know, straight impressions. He's doing it all. And he looks good and he can play guitar and he's got a great singing voice. Who knew? So I called him. I called him and I said, "Hey, dude, these people, I finally played your tape. Sorry it took so long. But guess what? Everybody loves it, and they want to sign you, and they want you to move out here and go on, you know, they want to send you out on pilot season for television, which is in January." And, you know, he's like, "Oh, no way."
Wow.
You know. So he said, "Well, I got one more semester of school, college, you know, to get my degree. And let me, you know, so I don't know if this is the best time, but let me talk to my parents." Okay. He was very close to his parents. His parents were wonderfully, wonderful people, wonderfully supportive. And he gets back to me and he says, "Well, my parents said, you know, you can always go back to school. So just, you got to go for it. It's an opportunity. You got to go for it." So Jimmy, on January 2nd, 96, right? Now we're in 96, yeah. I picked him up at the airport. He had a guitar and a trunk. That's it. And I had been staying with Bob, the aforementioned Bob Ital, and I was wearing out my welcome at his house. And I needed a place, and he needed a place. So we ended up renting it like a townhouse. And we lived together as roommates for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And we're thick as thieves. I mean, I really hadn't known him that well before, but we got along famously, and, you know, we did a lot of music stuff together, and I turned him on to a lot of stuff, which he credits me for, and, you know, it was a wonderful, and then he would, you know, he'd be at the Improv, I introduced him to his first manager, because she was working at this company that I was with, and then she broke off, and he went with her. And the company fell apart anyway. But and I moved on to other things. But she was the one that she had connections with Saturday Night Live, which was his dream. It's all he wanted. He was obsessed with getting on Saturday Night Live. That was his one career goal. Anything beyond that was, you know, gravy. So she got him an audition that first year, and he wasn't ready yet. He didn't get it. But 2 years later, in 98, he nailed it. And the rest is history.
Wow. What's funny, though, is when you and I first met, you had known that I had done that that fluke thing on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. With the,
but right. I think for a split second, you brought up Jimmy.
The sweatshirt or something? It was, what was that again?
The Battle of the Instant Bands.
Oh, that's what you were taken out of the audience as a contestant.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So, like, it just came up, and you were like, you kind of went like, "Yeah, yeah, I know. Everybody wants to meet Jimmy." And I go, "No." I was like, "I didn't even know that you knew Jimmy." And I hadn't even heard that whole story until just now. But when we first got together, I only knew about the music licensing thing. I had no idea. And then, of course, once I knew, I was like, "All right, now we really have to talk." But
well, you know, I only wish I had the kind of influence. My influence, you know, I can get 4 tickets to any show, but I can't give them to anybody. The people have to come with me.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah. Oh, and that makes sense. And I mean, yeah, and I could see somebody that has.
But as far as, I mean, he doesn't even, you know, he has bookers that book the town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's.
But I mean, as famous as he is and as nice as he is, I'm sure a lot of people try to take advantage. And so as a good friend, you are very delicate to not do that with him.
Never. The friendship is way too important to me for me to ever try and take advantage of it.
And that's probably why you remain to be friends with him, because you don't take advantage of that. I think that's awesome.
Because others tried and fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I can imagine that because, I mean, you can, I mean, you know, with all of my fame, I'm rolling my eyes. You know, I just, you know how people start to just ask you stuff and ask stuff of you. And you just get to a point where you're like, oh, you're just a taker, you know, like you're not actually in it for the friendship and stuff like that.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing you can really do for me professionally anyway. So, so that's all good. And,
That's such a crazy story.
We've stayed in touch, and I go to the show periodically, and he always go backstage when he greets me warmly, and whoever I bring with me, he is the nice guy that you see. He really is.
I believe
And if he'll, you know, I'll bring total strangers down to meet him, and he'll like listen, ask some questions and really listen. Like, oh, really? You know, he's the real deal. And I was, you know, he did swing through Albany a few months ago, and we got a chance to hang out.
I saw some of the pictures. That was awesome.
That was really fun. And he really, I mean, he's really been just a wonderful friend, never mind the fame.
Yeah. Well, what was funny was when I was on, it was when it was still Late Night with Jimmy Fallon before he was on The Tonight Show.
Right.
And he asked us where we were from, and I said, Albany. And he goes, oh, I love Albany. And the audience laughed, and he looked at, he goes, I do. And like, I love that part right there because it was so genuine. And he was lovely, so lovely. But me saying Albany and him saying he loves it and people laughing to me is just fucking hilarious. Because who loves Albany? It's like Jimmy Fallon loves Albany.
Yeah, on network television.
Yes. On network television. I'm so glad I finally got to hear the whole story.
That's the whole story in a nutshell. Yeah,
that's great.
But we those 2.5 years were some of the funniest. When I look back on it now, it was just a blast. Just going bowling and going to breakfast all the time. You know, just hanging out.
Yeah.
And when I'm with him, even to this day, I'm hilarious. The minute he leaves the room, I have no comedy chops at all.
Well, then I really need to be in the same room with you two just to see that.
It for some reason he brings it out in me.
He seems very his enthusiasm seems
infectious. It's infectious, he'll laugh at you. You know, he'll give you the reaction. I mean, he's really the farthest thing from stuck up or narcissistic or conceited or any of that. He's a rare, famous talented entertainer who's not like that. He's got a big heart. He's just a really great guy.
Rare being the operative word because it really
very
is.
Rare.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Because usually the qualities that get you there are those annoying, you know.
Anyway. Well, I'm really glad that I finally got to hear that whole story. We never really delved into it. Like, I knew that you had a history with him, and I knew that his history involved Metroland, which we have brought up twice now. So what do you say we bring it up one last time?
Well, you do. You take it from here.
I'm honestly so grateful that you are part of this interview where I can make this announcement that I have been teasing for a while now, because it seems like it's going to be finally happening in the next couple of days. We've hit a few roadblocks here and there, but I have acquired the rights to Metroland from Steve. With his permission and his blessing. But even though he did say, he was like, legally, you don't really have to do that. But why would you want to start out on a bad foot like that? And so I did my due diligence and I went back. And what was funny was the event, which we don't need to mention, the event that we saw each other at last. I was talking to somebody and my husband was like, did you hear? And she was like, what? And I told her what was going on. She was like, she puts her head around. She goes, does Peter know? And I go, oh yeah, Peter knows. So like, she immediately wanted to make sure that you knew. So you were my next call after Steven. And
I think it's great. I don't have any influence one way or the other, but I certainly don't have any objection. Much, if anything, I give you nothing but encouragement. And
That means so much to me, honestly.
And
thank you.
If there's some way that I can participate with all that spare time that I have.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that. And I think Steve's not one to show excitement, but I think he's I get the feeling he's not displeased that this is, you know, it's kind of like a legacy. It's mine for a while and his as well.
And I will do it justice.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that.
And when I talked to him, he said, you know, let me think it over. And he thought about it. And we talked the next day. And he said, you know, I have no problem with that. There's going to be one little modifier to make sure that, you know, that everybody knows that it is under different management. But, yeah. But no, he.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, not, it's not, also, not, it, I'm not just talking about him, me too.
He also did. Yeah. He gave us blessing and his encouragement.
People need to know that this is your baby and, you know, any involvement that these old people have.
You can swear on this.
Old farts have. That's not even swearing.
I know. Well, it's something else that starts with an F that I'm right. going to say, but you're welcome to. They know me by now.
Yeah.
But yeah. It meant a lot to me, though, because like I did, like I said, I was just going after, you know, the permission. And instead of permission, I got, you know, permission and encouragement and like some very kind words from a lot of people that are excited to see it come back. And I'm excited to bring it back.
I think there's a real need.
I think so, too. There's definitely a vacuum. And the best thing is that I've talked to, like, the more people that I talk to, the more I hear people say, you know, a lot of people have talked about doing this for years, but you're the only one that I believe is actually going to do it. And I was like, that, like, the
well,
encouraging
you're the only
words,
one that has the energy that it takes.
I just had lunch with somebody that was talking about, like, the online calendar thing. And they go, a lot of people have tried. And they've just fizzled out. And I looked right across them at the table. I go, I've never fizzled out once in my life. And
you're not
like,
a fizzler.
I believe you. I'm not a fizzler.
I'll tell you, though, it. I can't tell you how many people will come up to me and say, yeah, we really miss the Metrolands. Oh, that's what they call it. We really miss Metrolands so much. You know, is where there's nowhere now we feel we can turn and really get a comprehensive listing. People are trying in print and otherwise, and I give them all my, you know, everybody does pretty good work, but nobody is really giving you the whole story because it takes resources. You mm-hmm. have to, somebody, you almost have to have a full-time person that's just gathering information. And sometimes, you know, if you're passive about it and just wait for people to, you would think, well, everybody wants free publicity. They're just going to send, you know, they're just going to email me stuff anyway. But no.
No.
They don't. You have to actually pursue them for the sake of your readers. And that's what people don't get. And
when you work with anybody who is in the arts or anybody who's creative, it's like wrangling monkeys. I mean, it's really,
yeah.
you just, there's yeah. a lot of ego, a lot of personality, and you have to, everybody has a different language, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's true.
So I'm discovering that too, but I have a lot of really great people working with me and making sure that we can put out the most comprehensive calendar and hopefully show our worth to the point where when somebody sees that they may have been missed inadvertently, that they'll be like, here, take these
yeah,
dates
well,
and
that's
submit
what you,
themselves.
That's what you want to happen.
That's the end goal. But
it has to be managed. It can't be passive.
No.
It's got to be proactive.
You know it's going to be managed.
Yeah, well. I mean, I think that you're singularly well-positioned in this market, given all your everything that you do already, including this podcast, to take this on. And I don't think there's anybody better for it. So.
I think we have to end there because I might cry a little bit. That was very, that was,
no,
that
I
means
mean
a lot
it.
To me.
No, I mean it.
Thank you so
do
much.
Do we have to end already? This is fun.
We can have you back.
Okay.
Would you like to come back?
Sure.
What's next for you? What's happening in your life?
What I you don't got? Know. Can I plug my bands?
Of course you can.
Well, I play with, this band is like my family, Diva and the Dirty Boys. The bass player is a guy named Joe Monarello that we have literally played together for 50 years. We played together in the 70s, and we've been friends for that long. And then we have Rob and Lisa and Johnny and Chris, and these are just great human beings. And, you know, it's a fun, fun band.
I've only met Lisa once or twice.
Yeah, Lisa's the sweetest.
She is.
And she's a powerhouse.
Lovely.
She's a great singer. I mean, really good singer.
People always think that women singers, when they meet one another, are just not going to like each other. And I'm like, I don't even know why. Like, I think we saw each other at the bathroom at the Eddie's. And it was like, hey, you know, we don't know each other really, other than the same community. And then we were both doing the Dustin Mealy benefit.
Right.
And it was my first time meeting her. She came up to give me a heads up. She goes, "Your microphone is not loud enough." And I was like, "You're my new best friend."
Yeah, she'll do that. she'll do that.
She goes, "Somebody told me about that. I thought you should know."
She knows.
But then, you know, I got up there and I could have put the microphone on the floor and the people in the back would have still heard.
You don't even need the microphone.
I don't need the microphone, but it was sweet of her to look out for me like that.
Well, yeah. And she's very, she's
very,
very
sweet. That's rare for women to look out for other women like that when it comes to.
And I'm also playing as kind of a sub, but I feel like, you know, these are wonderful people too. The Hawthorns, great band.
Oh yeah. Laura.
Laura.
Another, you love these female singers, huh?
Well, the operative word is female. But
still doing it for the chicks, Peter, but, after all these years.
I know. She can't shake it. Laura's lovely as well. Great singer, you know. And now Laura and Lisa have become like thick as thieves. So, we're really creating like our own little community. It's great. And then occasionally I go to Rhode Island and I play with a band there called Brotherhood. That's really great. I don't know if anybody from Rhode Island would ever be.
You never know.
You never know. Brotherhood is great, and then a band that was playing back when I was playing there in the 70s, and they're still at it, Steve Smith and the Nakeds, big horn band, five horns, and powerhouse band, and I actually tried to do it full-time because I loved the band so much, and I just couldn't do it, and I didn't want to move, and the commuting was getting ridiculous. They work all the time, and... So I'm now like in the bullpen. If they need a keyboard player, I can't do it. I'm the first call. So all of that. And then there's other little projects I have too. And then there's, we're just going to say the name, Sophia Kortz. Remember I said this.
Yes.
Sophia Kortz, just like I told Jimmy.
Yes.
Someday she'll be on your show. And I won't have anything to do with it.
Yes, you will.
Well, our friendship won't. You know, my friendship with him won't be the factor. It'll be independent of my influence.
Yes,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Fair enough.
On her own, she is very talented. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, I think I covered all my plugs.
All right. Well, I mean, I would love to have you back. We can follow up, and you can let me know how I'm doing with your baby.
Yeah. I'm anxious to. Help in any way.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's been wonderful to talk to you guys. This is Peter Islin on The Mistress of None. I am Erin Harkes, and we will be right back.
Thank you, Erin.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Welcome back to The Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. I was trying to figure out the order of which I wanted to do things. I was going to talk about Metroland or talk about my connection with Jimmy Fallon, and I'm all over the place. So here is the story of when I got to be on the Tonight Show, The Late Show with Jimmy Fallon. I was not on the Tonight Show. This was right before he got the Tonight Show. So here's the story for those of you that don't know it. It was 2009, April, my mom and I went down to see The Late Show with Jimmy Fallon. We had tickets. We met up with my aunt, and we were waiting in line. They have you get there kind of early. You wait in line, and they just were coming around and asking questions. I wasn't really paying attention, and they were asking who was a musician, and my mom grabbed my arm and threw it up in the air, and I pulled back from her because I was like, what am I volunteering for? I don't know if I want anything to do with this. And they said to me, are you a musician? I said, yes. And they said, what do you play? And I said, I play guitar and piano. And they were like, okay, great. Can you meet back here at this time or whatever? And it was also a little bit of a blur because this was before I got sober. And I'm not saying that I was like hammered that day, but my memory is just a little askew. Anyway, so I met over where they asked the musicians to form, and they were coming around and asking us again. And I said, you know, FYI, I actually sing better than I play either of those instruments. So I thought you should know that, you know, I'm a vocalist. And they said, okay, we'll go over to that group then. And there was about 20 other people, and they took us around the corner one at a time and asked us to sing part of Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. And I heard the person go before me, and, you know, I did okay. And it got to me and I turned the corner and I sang literally like four notes of it. And they said, stop, go over there, and pointed. And I walked to where they told me to go. And I didn't know if that was a good or a bad thing. So I went over and the guy came around the corner and there was another group of people hanging out. And he looked at a list and he was looking at all of us and he pointed at me. He goes, okay, definitely you. And then I didn't know what that meant. And then he picked a few other people and they moved us to another area. And there were, at this point, 16 of us. And they split us up into groups of four. And they said, basically, you're going to go into a room and you're going to write a song in 20 minutes. They didn't really say much more than that. There was a lot happening. Everything was moving really fast. But they said, you have to write a song in 20 minutes. And I said, are we going to be on TV? And they wouldn't answer me. And they led us up to my group, my four. They led us up to a dressing room, which was actually the Saturday Night Live dressing room. So that was really, really cool. I was like looking around and realizing like these hallowed halls and all of the amazing people that have been in this room before me, and was just trying to wrap my brain around that. And we were in this room and they said, you have 20 minutes. They said, write a song. It helps if you play up to Jimmy somehow. And again, I asked, I was like, are we going to be on TV? And they were like, haha, like they wouldn't answer me. So there was, you know, a drummer, a bass player and a guitar player. And everybody was just kind of fucking around and like noodling and stuff. And the personality that I have, I was like, well, somebody needs to take over. And that's what I did. I said, okay. I was like, that thing that you were just playing, keep playing that. And I was like, and then you do this. And I started like writing down some lyrics. And I remembered that they said to play up to Jimmy. So I wrote this song. I don't know where this was coming from, but it was just called Free Jimmy. I don't know why. I can't explain it at all. That's just what came out. So I started writing it. I was kind of like directing and telling everybody what to do and writing the words and singing it. And the guy came in at one point, and actually, like, when I was singing, he was like, you know, he's like, save your voice a little bit because, you know, you're going to have to sing this again. And I was like, again, are we going to be on TV? And he wouldn't answer me. And at one point, I, like, walked down the hall a little bit to hear one of the other bands just to size up the competition. And I came back feeling kind of confident. I think I was a little too confident, but I was also out of my mind. But I came back. I was like, we got this. We got this. But I still didn't really know what was going to happen. So after 20 minutes, they came in and they started putting mics on us, like the lav mics that clip into your shirt and the little battery pack that puts in your waist. And they walked us down these halls. And I asked again, I was like, are we going to be on TV? And they said, yeah. And I was like, shit. Like, what is happening? Everything was happening so fast. And next thing you know, we're standing behind this curtain and then they're like, go. And we walk out in this curtain and they sit us on the stage of the late show. And my band was on one side and another band was on another side. I guess two bands had been eliminated at that point. So it went from 16 to 8 people, two bands of four. And we decided to call ourselves the Fallon Angels. Again, I'm just following, you know, they said play up to Jimmy. I was like, okay. So he goes around and he asks us first, you know, what our band name is. And it was Fallon Angels. And he laughs and he asked me where I'm from. And I said, Albany. And the whole audience started to laugh. And he goes, oh, no, because he goes, I love Albany. And the whole audience started to laugh. And he was like, what? I do. So apparently they were ready to, you know, make fun of Albany at that moment. But our friend Jimmy was being serious because he went to St. Rose. And so anyway, we went up and we sang our song. And then the other band went up and they sang their song. And then the audience voted and we won. I feel like everything happened in like 5 minutes. And one of the things that, like, I mean, it's fine, but I like, it sucked at the time, kind of. I mean, I was happy that I was on it, but the winners got to keep their instruments, but since I didn't have an instrument, I didn't win an instrument. Like the drummer got her whole drum set and the guitar player got a guitar and the bass player got a bass. And I was joking. I was like, do I get to keep the microphone? And they were like, no. And I was like, can I have Jimmy's coffee cup? And they're like, no. And I said, can I have Questlove's hair pick? And they were like, get out of here. And I was just really excited. But I was even, we went and watched the show. We sat in the audience after and watched the show. And even the guitar player was like, that doesn't seem fair. He's like, you wrote the whole song. And if you watch the video, you see when they were like, the winners get to take their instruments. And I was just excited that we won. And we got a $300 gift certificate to Guitar Center, which I think I ended up giving to my brother so that he could get, like, you know, something for, he was my drummer at the time and poor. Anyway, but I'll share the video again on social media. It's been a while since I've shared it, but it was a fun day. It was really excited. My favorite question that I get asked all the time is, did you know you were going to be on TV? And my response is, if I did, don't you think I would have worn a bra? Because I was wearing this hippie dress with nothing underneath it. I had no makeup on at all. And also, you see the effects of years and years of drinking on me at that point. Like, I look back at pictures of me from like 2009 and 10, right before I got sober. And I feel like I look younger now than I did then. It makes me laugh. It gives me a lot of gratitude, honestly. But to answer, absolutely not. I did not know I was going to be on television. Trust. Anyway, it was a fun day. It was a really exciting experience. I'm so grateful for Peter for coming on the show and sharing his story, and for giving me his blessing and all those kind things that he said to me. I'm really excited about the Metroland coming back. It's going to be called Metroland Now, but everybody's going to shorten it anyway because you're all lazy, and that's fine. I'm super excited about this new project, and if you'd be so kind to share and share and share and get as many followers as we can, and just read these articles. It's going to be, we already have some great articles up there about some local shows that we've had, both with locals and with people passing through. And we really want to just blow up the scene. It's such a wonderful scene here, and we need people to keep coming out and supporting it so that it can survive. So just do that. Buy your tickets early, make a commitment, come to the shows, bring friends, tell your friends about it. We got to keep it going because there's a lot of really great talent in this area, and there's no reason why we can't be on the map for something positive instead of, you know, the negative news all the time, like that, you know, ESPN lady and whatever. Yeah, there may be not a bunch to do, but there is stuff to do, and let's highlight that, and let's support one another and be nice, for fuck's sake. Like me, I'm going to be nicer. I am very excited about this, and I'm taking it very seriously. And I'm still going to be my cynical self because that's just who I am. But I am going to stick to the positive message that the Metroland is going to bring. It's going to be a place of positivity, and it's going to be safe, and it's going to be fun, and we're going to have a great time. It's going to have, you know, a little bit of my signature snark, and it's not going to be fluff. But it's just not going to be, you know, shitty. Everything else can take turns shitting on venues and shitting on sound and you know, writing reviews that aren't pleasant. But that's not what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the good things, and we're going to highlight them, and we're going to give local artists a little bit of a level playing field for their stuff. And we're going to have a good time. And I hope you'll join me. And thank you so much for tuning in and for your patience. While I've been teasing this for months, it's taken forever, but we're here now. And thank you. And I love you. And we'll see you soon. This has been The Mistress of None with Erin Harkes. Bye.
You're listening to The Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.